Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll get an update from Bonnie Brayton about Don Raff Canada. So it's been a while since we had a chance to talk, so if you can fill me in on a little of the latest happenings with Don. I imagine this year has brought on some changes to the work.
Oh my goodness, yes. We all live in a new, not so normal these days for sure, Cam, and Don Canada has absolutely been no exception to that. We transitioned, you know, like many organizations in March, April, to working from home and continue to do that. It's a real challenge, but I think like everyone else, we have over time adapted, and of course, I now really see the beauty of teleworking as something that I want to make sure we keep as part of our work going forward. But I really miss being together with my team. But I will say, despite that we've done a lot of really important work this year. I think some of this stuff that if, your viewers have a chance to go to our website at www.doncanada.net, they'll see, you know, some really interesting and important work we did during Indigenous Disability Awareness Month. Don't know if you had a chance to talk about that much on your show in November, but it was something we were really proud to be in partnership with BCANS. They're just great. So yeah, we did some stuff there. I think the big thing that I would say happened that month, and again, it's something you can see on our website as well, is we launched our new logo, which is a hummingbird. We had an event in December, in fact, on December 3rd, first event to really focus on this change at Dawn with something called the Hummingbird Awards, and gave the first of those awards out to three very worthwhile women, despite the fact there's so many more we think will be deserving in the future. We had to start somewhere, and so the first three women who received it this year were Minister Carla Qualtro, is a dear friend and colleague of mine, in addition to the amazing champion she's been for people with disabilities through her government, in spite of her government, I would say, sometime. Yasmin Arouche, again, somebody who's, you know, quietly been doing amazing things in the federal government for many years. One of the most senior bureaucrats in the federal government, leading the accessibility push inside the public service, and as it turns out, somebody who was a member of Dawn before I was part of Dawn in its early days, and somebody I've gotten to know and respect very much over the few years, and again, somebody whose work is worthy of recognition because it's been impactful and continues to be impactful. And the third was to a dear colleague and friend, Maureen Hahn, who's from CCRW, the Canadian, again, who rocks the house and has been very active partner with Dawn Canada on addressing the issue of employment and income for women and girls with disabilities. Very active. So the Hummingbird Award for us, Cam, is a way of sort of, I think, setting the bar in terms of what kind of things need to happen and change. The reason we did our logo this year is because this is our 35th year in service. And we started that year in June, and I basically said that it's a year of reflection. So from now until next June, we're in a year of reflection because things haven't changed for women and girls with disabilities. As you and I both know, not significantly, not even, you know, very incrementally have they changed much, despite 35 years of Dawn being around. So we felt it was time to take a new approach and kind of push for a new vision.
So in terms of what's lacking and what some of the major challenges are, could you take me through a few of those and what you'd like to see happen?
Well, You know, I think it would be tempting to put together a shopping list, Cam, but I'm in a philosophical end of the year looking forward kind of mood. So I think what I'll pivot to is to say that I think that the most important thing that we have to look at in 2021 is actually a larger conversation with the rest of the human rights family if we're going to be serious about moving the disability agenda forward. You know, 2020, like you said, was a very difficult year. But I describe it as a year that was filled with shadows and light, and that we need to see 2021 as the year we move towards the light, and that the shadows and light let us see many different kinds of oppression. You know, certainly I know you and I know very well that people with disabilities have suffered greatly through COVID-19 and all the things that have impacted everyone have impacted people with disabilities much more profoundly than many people will ever understand. But for all of us who, you know, work with and support people with disabilities, we've been up close and personal to that in many cases.
In that sense, there is actually one aspect that has been hopeful in this whole thing that has a strong impact for people with disabilities. The new opportunities for employment, because people are more working from home, for those who can't get out of the house as easily or have a mobility issue. Have you seen any examples of this as you've been along?
Absolutely. And I do think, like I said, one of the things I've seen and heard, even just an example from my dear friend Steve Esty. I don't know if your listeners know him, but they should all give a nod to Steve, because, of course, he was one of the people who helped
right,
the development of the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. Okay. And I was in a chat with him just, I think it was last week, and we were talking on an app from Google, and it's changed Steve's life. Steve is, you know, an incredibly powerful speaker who, as you know, sometimes cannot have conversations or could not have conversations because the budget wasn't there to do the captioning he needs to be supported to be in a conversation. And Steve and I had an entire conversation without having to pay for or find the money for a captioner, because this new app works quite well. And while it isn't something we would use at a public event, it means that for Steve in his daily life and, for example, in his daily work, he can go about his business in a way that he couldn't before. And, you know, that's just a small example of the kind of ways that technology is advancing and that COVID-19 has given people, I think, what's the word? Where, you know, there's more pressure on people to look at technology because it's the way we're working together now. So I don't think there's any question, like you said, Cam, that some of the things that come out of this, including the teleworking and the understanding that teleworking is a very viable way to work with people, is a very good thing.
So,
you know, I think there's other things. I don't think that's the only one, but I do think that that's a key one. I think that it would be a mistake not to point to the fact that although it's not there yet, the federal government has finally made a commitment to a national disability benefit is also something we need to take note of. Not in the context of how good it has been, but at least what it promises going forward, which is that we will not see what we saw through this crisis, which was that everybody under the sun, except people with disabilities, received some kind of support through COVID-19.
So if you could send any message to the community about what needs to happen next in this work, what would it be?
Well, I was going to say, if it's to our community, I guess what I would say is it's definitely going to be about solidarity. It's about looking for allies and making sure that you take the time with your allies to talk, to really listen and talk. I feel like over the last year, one of the things I've learned a lot about, Cam, and I don't know if it's to do with COVID-19 or turning 60, but it's to be humble and to listen to people. Because when you're humble and you listen to people, as it turns out, many, many, many times, those people in your community, the people that are beside you, are the most important allies that you have if you're there together. The same old is just the worst of humanity and the best of humanity over the last year. I don't know. But what would you say? I think nobody ever asks you that question. I'd like to know what you think.
Well, actually, you brought to mind a quote from Einstein in what you were saying. Mm-hmm. He once said that a mind stretched to new ideas will never return to its original dimensions. Therefore, my hope would be that we would actually remember the lessons we've learned in this and carry forward that respect and those principles and not just say that, oh, it's all good, we can go back to business as usual. Yeah. Business as usual is essentially what led us here.
That's right, my friend. That's exactly right. And I think that you're saying it much better, and Einstein says it much better than I would, but that was really what I was trying to get at, is it feels like we don't need to look back, and we can't look back. What we have to do is look forward. But like you said, with all that we've learned and understood over this last year,
But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
I also wanted to say something, Cam.
Yeah.
Which is that I'm really sorry that I haven't had a chance to do any interviews over the last few months, and to apologize for the fact that I couldn't even respond properly. But I was going to say, it is, you know, we didn't talk about in the interview, but the intensity and level of stress for the work is really, really high right now, and it has been. It's different, right? It's like I'm holding together a team of 12 from my front room.
Wow.
So I just wanted you to know that, because I know, you know, I really enjoy these conversations, and that it's been really tough for me to not be able to check in with you for a while. So it was just to say it was nice to talk to you.
You too.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
This next segment of our show, we'll hear from PGA golfer Todd Kierstead. He'll be telling us a little bit about his efforts to bring amputee golf into the mainstream. So, can you tell me a little bit about your work?
I'm a Canadian PGA member that has really pushed hard for the inclusion of adaptive golf in the mainstream.
So, what sort of efforts have you made to this end?
Well, I was heavily involved in 2017 in the Invictus Games when they were in Toronto. That was with 550 ill and injured soldiers from all around the world. I was a competition supervisor for the sport of golf. Golf was introduced in the Invictus Games in 2017. From there, I've had the privilege of being involved in something called the Warrior Games, which is what inspired Prince Harry to do the Invictus Games. That was down in Tampa, Florida in 2018. I've also had the privilege of traveling around the world with all branches of the U.S. military, working with their ill and injured soldiers. And then now I'm putting together a plan of growing the game of golf for individuals of all abilities. I have a team of the best disabled golfers in Canada that are under my guidance, that we're trying to grow the sport from grassroots all the way to elite level athletes.
So when you say all abilities, would this be an integrated type or specifically for those with varying levels of disability?
So there's all different classifications that we have. We have individuals with limb deficiencies, we have intellectual disabilities, we have cognitive disabilities. Really everybody that falls into an adaptive situation with both physical and mental situations do fall under this umbrella of adaptive golf.
So how are you spreading the word about this idea?
You know, what we're doing is, as I said, I put together a team of the best adaptive golfers in Canada. Utilizing the platform of social media has been big. I've been graciously sponsored throughout the years by Adidas Canada, as well as TaylorMade Canada, and they've really pushed hard on the growth of adaptive golf in Canada.
So, in the sport of adapted golf, is there any modified equipment that's used for these athletes?
Yeah, the modification equipment, there are quite a few, predominantly in a seated golfer, an individual that would be in a wheelchair that would not have the full functioning use of their legs. There's adaptive golf carts that are specifically used for seated individuals, as well as arm deficiency individuals that have either lost the use of the arm or have lost their arm. There's adaptive products that can be attached to golf clubs to give them a 2 point of contact onto the golf club as opposed to just 1 point. So for adaptive equipment, it's predominantly with a seated golfer as well as an arm deficiency golfer.
So when you've told me a little bit about your experiences traveling with the military, how do the wounded soldiers feel about knowing they can get back into sport?
You know what? The Invictus Games, we've seen it across Canada, seen it across the world. You know, a lot of individuals are using the power of sport to claim a sense of normalcy again. Individuals, you know, that have been injured in the theater of war might have lost their purpose in life, but sport has given them the opportunity to not only participate, but also compete with other like-minded individuals. It just gives them a purpose again to get out of the house again, utilizing something that is very therapeutic as sports is.
So are there any challenges in getting them out of the mindset of loss and back into the sport?
The challenge is on an individual personal level. And the thing about it is, you know, people that have been playing the game of golf before an injury know what their level was before that injury. Then when they've had an injury and realize that, okay, golf isn't the way that it used to be for me, but here's an adaptive way that I can get out and play. An individual might not be able to play on the same level as they once were, and it's getting out of that mindset of, okay, this is my new normal. We're all relating that now to COVID as a new normal, but each individual person that has experienced a traumatic injury now has a new normal. And once they get over that mindset of, okay, this is my new normal, then they can get out and play successfully. But if not, they're stuck in the fact of, I don't want to play again because I'm not as good as I once was.
So, in your time pushing for the sport in greater measure, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Oh my God, I live daily on success stories. One of the biggest success stories was an individual I was working with just outside of Tampa, Florida. Unfortunately, was involved in a sniper attack in Afghanistan and took a bullet to the neck, and he became a paraplegic from the waist down. After me doing a clinic with other wounded veterans, he wasn't participating in that clinic because it was his first time out and suffering with severe PTSD as well. But after the clinic, when everybody left, he was still watching myself and what I was doing. So I decided to get into a seated situation and hit golf balls, trying to get on the level that he was at. After a couple minutes, he wheeled down to me and we just started talking as I was hitting golf balls from a seated position. Then after a couple minutes after that, I asked him if he wanted to give it a try. And reluctantly, he said yes, but he decided to hit some golf balls. And I got him hitting it about 50 to 75 yards off the tee. Then I said, are you ready to go? And he said, no, I'm actually having a really good time. Like, I grew up playing golf, but I thought I'd lost it due to my situation. I said, no, are you ready to go play? And he said, really? So what I did was I wheeled him to the first tee, and it was at the end of the day. So we were able to play hole number one, and we were able to play hole number nine. And as we were coming back onto the ninth green, I didn't realize, but his wife came to pick him up and saw him on the golf course. She called two of his friends that played golf before. So there was three people surrounding the green, all in tears. Now here, you got to remember, this was a hardened military hoorah soldier. Looked up at three of his friends, wife and two friends, and all of us were in tears because we gave him back something that he thought he lost. And that's just one of the many stories, but one that impacted me pretty hard.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Looking to become bilingual or promote bilingualism in Canada? Look no further. Apply for the Odyssey or Explore program for the chance to improve your French or help young people improve their English. You'll immerse yourself in another region's language and culture, make new friends, and have experiences that will stay with you forever. Many people say the Odyssey and Explore programs have changed their lives. To find out more or to apply, visit EnglishFrench.ca. Programs funded by the Government of Canada.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an
an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Bonnie Brayton from Dawn Canada and from PGA golfer Todd Kierstedt. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Jessica Sartori from the JMC Center. So, tell me a little bit about your work at the McGivney Center and some of the highlights of the past year.
Sure. So, my name is Jessica Sartori, and I'm the CEO at the John McGivney Children's Center. I've been with the center since October of 2019. And I'm really, really happy to be here at the center. It's a really welcoming environment, and the staff here are fabulous, and they do really, really great work. Essentially, we are one of 22 children's rehabilitation centers or children's treatment centers in the province of Ontario. And we serve kids from really birth until age 18 and even beyond 18 to age 21 if they're still in school. And we provide occupational therapy, physiotherapy, speech and language service. We also provide augmentative communications support and service, as well as mobility.
So, this past year, I'd imagine some of the programs and services had to be adapted in light of the whole COVID situation.
Well, they sure were, and actually, it's a piece of work that I'm really proud of at the center. We really quickly shifted to virtual service where we could. Staff were excited to do that, and we're very, very creative. We've heard back from families as well that while it certainly isn't, you know, the same as in-person service, the way we went about it, the fact that, you know, we did have to move to virtual service in the first wave of the coronavirus, which of course was, really unexpected for us. We purchased laptops. We got staff set up with the equipment that they needed. And one of our priorities, two of our priorities during that time were not only service continuity in whatever way that it looked like, continue to ensure support for kids and families and that they could continue on with their therapy, but also to be able to really keep in touch with families so that they knew that we're there for them and we're there for their kids. And as I said, so staff got really, really creative. I'm not sure if you... we're able to see any of the videos that we had posted online, but not only were they doing individual virtual therapy or virtual service for kids and families, they were also creating these really neat videos. Sometimes they would create videos together, but virtually together in their individual homes, but where we were wanting to educate the community about what John McGivney does and about how families can support their kids at home. So sort of an educational videos as well.
So were there any challenges in coordinating the online efforts?
Well, we certainly had to catch up in terms of our technology. And so we knew that, you know, it was something that we had sort of planned anyway, that we wanted to start having more, you know, laptops that that staff could take, you know, wherever they needed to take them. But so while it was something that, you know, we were sort of planning, that kicked into high gear when we went to virtual service. So COVID was you know, really an opportunity for us to you know, to buy equipment that we had planned to do anyway. We hadn't planned to do that for the purpose of virtual service, but really so that staff, you know, had an opportunity to, if they needed to, you know, take their laptops with them. If it was a, you know, either a home visit, or we do provide services in schools as well, or even within the center, you know, so that they could write things down sort of contemporaneously, or easily be able to, you know, pull up something on the web, for example, if they wanted to show something to a family. But yeah, it because of the, you know, the real requirement for virtual service, because we wanted to have continuity of service, we were able to purchase laptops very, very quickly and get up and running.
So, do you think when the world gets back to quote-unquote normal, that some of the lessons regarding virtual and online service will be things that you carry forward in terms of your work?
Cam, absolutely. And you know, it's something that we've started thinking about already, is that we think there's an opportunity to sort of provide you know, even more service on top of, you know, once we get back to normal, as you say, and start, you know, being able to, you know, get back to that, you know, normal in-person service situation. But we feel like there may be opportunities for us to leverage our capabilities now and provide a virtual service, so that we can really provide even more support to kids and families, you know, even outside of or in addition to, you know, that normal face-to-face service.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Oh, sure.
The truth is, no matter what the situation, no matter what the disability, there's always potential in anyone. Starting at a very young age, giving children with disabilities an educational opportunity, places like the McGivney Center really are setting the tone for the path their futures can take. The truth of the matter is, we as a people must never underestimate them. For the fact is, we all are but one moment away from finding ourselves with a disability. And honestly, when we invest in the lives, those may move a little differently, think a little differently, speak a little differently, we're showing a genuine respect for diversity, for all types of people, and the understanding that the way we do things does not make us better or worse than anyone else in society. Disability is all about modification, adaptation, just using the tools you've been given in a different way. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.